hey, you have a fun show today?
It will be fun because we'll make it fun.
Right.
Because that's what we do. Once we turn the lights down. But we have some. It's very interesting. David Soucy is the author of Why Planes Crash. He's an accident investigator. He's going to talk to us a little bit about the Amtrak crash in Washington, why you have to be careful if you get a drone for Christmas.
Okay.
And he'll give us an update on MH370, which has been missing for like 18 years now, right?
Well, it feels like that.
It's been over 2 years, I think.
Yeah, because that was almost three years now, because I think it was March. I'm actually obsessed with disaster NTSB reports.
Oh, really?
I go down the rabbit hole of Wikipedia, read every plane crash report. I don't know why. And then I get on a plane and I'm like, oh, crud. Every noise I listen to.
The Weather Channel has a great show, Why Planes Go Down.
Yeah, I've watched almost all of them. Yes. Yeah. I will go home tonight and probably watch a plane crash doc. I know it's a really weird thing, but
I totally get it.
And I know it's totally safe. I know air travel is great, and you know,
and
it's getting safer, you know, and it continues to get safer. But I find that stuff fascinating, just why it happens.
I think my fascination with it, I've always thought that that at some point in my life, I'm going to see a plane
go down
as I'm traveling back and forth. And I think the fascination with it is because you have no control over
nothing.
You're just sitting there.
That's the scariest part about it.
I hope this works out.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do.
And it's always fascinating because this just speaks to how safe airline travel usually is, that when a plane goes down or when we have the accident, even with the train, it's usually not one thing. It's a series of things that have to go wrong in order for it to happen.
Have you read Malcolm Gladwell's, not the first book, there was one, I'll have to bring it in for you.
Okay.
He does a whole section on plane crashes and how at least three things go wrong. It's either weather, inexperienced crew, but it's all these things together.
Right.
And they have very interesting stories about some different crashes.
So it's interesting. It's like a fascinating exercise to piece together exactly how it happens. Now, it's obviously all terrible circumstances and usually ends up in real bad shape, but it is an interesting subject. So I'll be listening is all I'm saying.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear that.
Normally, I don't. Normally, yeah, I say I'm going down. I'm like, you're in a bye.
I see you posting on Facebook 10 minutes later. We're Passport. It's the greatest.
That is so true. That is very true.
And I don't think they play G in a boss bar.
No, they don't. They don't. No, yeah. Mike, can we get them to do that?
Maybe.
We'll
pitch them out there. It's funny to me that it's the Christmas year and we just do Polar Express and you're like, you know what I'm going to do to really ring in a good old Santa sleigh? Watch a plane crash documentary. I think that's the way to go.
Hey,
Mike's sitting here going, I cannot believe that Patty's not here and we're still going to talk to 210 before we get to the news. How is this possible?
Let's break down all the plane crashes.
But then real quick, then after 3 o'clock, Jason Steffen is he's a rocket scientist. He's one of those guys. He works on the Kepler mission. They find exoplanets, habitable planets.
Wow.
In other, you know.
What is the exo mission? Is that our mission to get the heck on out of here?
Kepler searches for exoplanets, so planets outside of our solar system, around other suns. And they found, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. So he's going to come on to update us on that. And also, all this craziness this week with these UFO things that were released, that the government had the secret program and stuff like that.
That's
so we'll chat with him about the search for intelligent life.
So holiday themed, the whole thing.
Absolutely. All the way through. Hell yeah.
That's really cool stuff. Mike, good job tonight.
Thank you, John. Good job to you,
too. Who are you texting right now?
I'm actually texting Patty Vasquez.
Oh, just to let her know how terrible we did.
Did she want to call in on the crosstalk part?
I think she was trying to call in during our Polar Express try. But hey to Patty. Thank you so much for letting us fill in for you tonight. Hope we did you proud. And Merry Christmas to you all. Matt, John, Merry Christmas,
guys. You too, Mike. All right, this is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It's 204. That's got to be a record. We're going up to Roger Maddish with the news.
And Michael and Jonathan, check your Facebooks. You have a jib-jab Christmas card for me.
I saw the notification come in. I knew it had to be a jib-jab.
Very welcome.
You
enjoy.
Are the quintessential old man on Facebook, I got to say. like the jib-jab is the new thing, and Roger discovered it, and... How many jib jabs have you posted? Do you get like a frequent jib jab discount or something?
Yeah, I do.
Card?
I've got a gold membership.
How many punches do you have on that thing? My God, you're the only thing keeping jib jab going. They've been trying to shut it down for years, but Roger just keeps on jib jabbing. That's where they get all their advertising dollars. Now it's 2:05. The lights are out. Fun is happening. Roger, jib jab away, my friend.
Good morning. morning, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. No Patty Vasquez tonight. I'm kind of sad I didn't get to wish Patty a Merry Christmas, but that's okay. We send her all of our love. She was out there listening to Michael and John, so maybe she stuck around for a couple of minutes. How are you, Roger Badish?
I'm doing fine, Mr. Matt Bubala.
A festive red shirt.
Why, thank you very much. I keep spilling little sugary stuff from some of the Christmas cookies that are still up here.
Oh, they're Christmas cookies up
there. Oh, they're so good. I have to, like, slap myself.
Some... Well, just
because I don't want to eat them.
If you get tired of that, one of us can come up and slap you for you.
I'm sure you can. Thank you so much. You get tired after a while.
We're here to help. Yes, we're here to help. Jess, it's all the way up on the right, on top of one of the computers on the shelf. Jess is going to order pizza, Rod. You want some pizza?
Again? Yeah, the same place?
Yeah. To the right, Jess. To the right. To the right. You're right. To you're right. You're right. You're right. All the way. All the way. Up above.
To the right.
To the right. On top of one of those old dusty computers. Go to your right. All the way to the wall. Yeah. Isn't there an old computer on there? It's sitting right on top of it, because I knew it would never move from there.
That's why it's dusty.
The menu from the Papa Nino's place.
Yeah.
I hit it well.
He's very good. By the way, I love the festive glow of the computer screens down there.
See, you found it. See, Jess is looking at me like, you're crazy. Why would you put it there? Because there it is. That's why. It will never get lost in that dusty. When there's an inch of dust on something, perfect hiding place.
Of course.
Clearly nobody ever goes there.
Right.
I'm sorry. Now, what were you saying, Roger?
I like the festive glow of the computer screens with the red buttons. And,
it is nice,
and there's
it?
The little glow of the Christmas tree behind you.
I love having it dark in here. The new lighting they put in, you know, of course, they're getting better with the LED lighting.
Right.
But you got to talk to Lou about this. They got to work on this LED lighting.
Well, it's for the TV. They do the live broadcast down there twice a day.
All right, that's fine. Yeah. The old lighting would have worked. It still lit up the room.
It wasn't the right coloring. The lights were the wrong temperature.
There is no way this is the right temperature. There's no way this is the right temperature. This is so harsh.
Yeah. Well, that's what... Now you got the HD TV. They've got
those... Yeah, but that's the problem. You need good lighting on that.
That's why you got to wear makeup.
That's why you need better lighting, because you look... You know, you look like you really look. Who wants to look like they really look?
Well, maybe when
rub
we get
some
to
Vaseline
them.
On these lenses. Let's soften this up. Get Barbara Walters in here. Come on, fix this. I don't want to look like that makes me look. That's real, man. No, thank you. I'm too old for that nonsense.
The new place will have better lighting, I'm sure.
The new place.
I'm sorry.
I don't want to move. I'm very sad about that.
I know. We won't have a ground floor showcase studio.
We don't have that anymore.
Yeah.
Have they said what's going to happen with the Walk of Fame?
With the whom?
Walk of Fame.
With the what?
With the Walk of Fame.
Oh, I have not heard.
No. I'm not worried about that. I don't think anybody that paid $300 million for this building is going to say, yeah, just leave your Walk of Fame there.
But I don't think they can't expand the building out over that. They can't cover it up.
No.
They might rip up the ground and build something next door.
Well, they might just rip up the ground and put concrete back down, because there's no WGN radio here. You know what I mean?
Once we move, I know.
You know, it's not going to still say WGN radio on the building anymore.
I wonder how much of the courtyard they own as part of owning the building.
From what I understand, the courtyard is owned by the Tribune Building and the, what's next to us, the Equitable Building?
I think so, yeah.
I believe that's like a joint venture.
Okay.
Because from what I remember from, you know, when I worked here more regularly, producing John's show, and like, you know, when there were events and you had to go through, there's like an insane amount of hoops they had to go through to do anything out on that, on the plaza. So I think that, I believe it's not, like, we don't own it. I don't think Equitable owns it. I think it's kind of a joint.
All right. So then with that in mind, in my opinion, I think that they will leave that there, and that we could add to that as part of a ceremony as we move forward. I think that's an attraction that they will want to keep.
That's interesting thought. I'm going to bet you now, Art goes.
All right.
Nobody has any sentimentality anymore, Roger.
They do.
No, they don't.
Yeah, I cry all the time. I'm very sentimental.
Well, I know you do, but you don't have $300 million to buy a building and turn it into condos.
No, I don't. Now you're going to make me cry because of that.
Man, I wish I would have had the money to buy this thing.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
My investment kind of went south.
Scratch-off tickets?
Got that right. My one a year.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thanks for staying up even later with us. It's the Matt Bubala Show. We got Roger Badish in the newsroom. Producer extraordinaire Jess Raines is behind the glass tonight. You are out there, and you can be part of it, too. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You can call or text and be part of the show, and we'd love to have you on board. As we mentioned to the guys, Michael and Jonathan, as we did Crosstalk, David Soucy, who's been on with us before about his book, Why Planes Crash, is going to join us after 2:30. We'll talk a little bit about the Amtrak crash. He's working on a new book. We'll chat with him about that. And drones. I have a drone. Still got to really figure out how to work the thing. I crashed it in the house and made a big mark on the wall.
When did you get it?
I got it last year at the end of the year. It was a Black Dog purchase that we planned on using. You know, we want to shoot. We're trying to expand how we shoot and different things like that. So I bought a drone because at the end of the year, you get such good deals on a lot of things. And it's a pretty cool drone. Shoots really nice video. What you do is you have this controller that you attach like an iPad or your phone or whatever to that has a an app that then you control it from. And I just haven't had the time to really play with it and learn how to work it. And when we had the eclipse this summer, I brought it out then, and I was going to try to shoot a little film. The problem is you cannot film up. The camera underneath it goes down in a circle, but it doesn't point up.
Yeah.
So I couldn't shoot any of it, and it wouldn't have worked anyways, I'm sure. But so I flew it a little bit that day in the backyard and was starting to learn how to do it and got real excited about it. And then I had it in the house at night, and during the eclipse, Jack was in school, so he wasn't around with the drone, and I still had it in the house. I hadn't taken it fully apart. I'm like, hey, yeah, you want to see this thing? And he's like, sure. And I thought, you know, I know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. You lift it, you can just lift it off the ground real easily and then land it pretty easily. So I'll just bring it up a couple feet in the air and land it. Well, I bring it up, what I didn't take into account were the walls in the house.
Well, but you have enough room in there to just
you
get
have
a,
plenty
let
of
go
room
up
to float.
Down.
But what happens is if you aren't real good at controlling it, the pressure off the walls from the air that you're generating starts moving this thing around. So I lifted it just straight up in the air and it starts going.
Yikes.
Like sideways. And then in that instant, you start freaking out on what the controls do because I've only used it a few times. And now I expected just to go straight up in the sky, and then I was going to bring it straight back down. But it started moving towards the wall. And so then I'm trying to, next thing I know, wham! And I've got rotor gashes in one wall in our house.
Gosh. Oops.
And of course, Colleen doesn't hear it happen, and then the kid's like, did you see Dad crash the drone in the wall? God, how do we not know that Mom does not need to know everything?
But she was going to say, excuse me, guys.
Not necessarily.
Is there a reason why there's gashes in my wall?
It might have taken her months to pass by this wall.
I don't think so.
Oh, I'm serious, Raj. I might have gotten away with this for a good long time until I could have made up a story to blame on somebody else.
Yeah. So, just so you know.
Yes, sir.
Because, you know, I'm semi-retired.
Yes. And you're less retired than most people I know, Raj.
I know. Speaking of video, I am certified in Final Cut Pro, just so you know.
Oh, are you really?
I have been certified for a long, long time.
I didn't know that there was a certification process for
There's
Final Cut Pro.
There's many steps for Final Cut Pro certification. There's many levels.
Are you certified in the new Final Cut Pro?
No, I'm certified in Final Cut Pro 10, which was good about maybe 5 years ago.
Yeah. What's the new one, Final Cut Pro?
I have no idea.
The new one is pretty different because we've switched to the newest
Well, I
one.
Do remember I was still teaching when they switched over to the new look of it when the professionals thought that Apple had gone backwards to try to appease the less experienced and made it look like some light show kind of workstation or desktop. But we never upgraded our computers at the school. I used to teach it, and that's why I had to get certified in it so that the kids could get certified. And like I said, it's been at least 5 years now. So, and I've only done some editing, you know, in that time for friends and family.
Do you have to keep up your certification? Are you in danger of losing your certification?
I don't think I have to. Well, I'm like I said, I'm certified on 10.
Who certifies this?
They actually, Apple has a certification program, and they farm it out. They don't conduct it.
Sure.
But they'll be like a company that does training in Final Cut Pro, Adobe Premiere, audio programs, Adobe Photoshop. They provide classes for that, and they also provide certification for that. You take the tests. that are approved by Apple and Adobe and those companies.
That's good. Yeah. I don't know how to do any of that stuff. Jim, my coworker at Black Dog, he does all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't mess with that. And he's got to know how to do all that. Yeah, and it is amazing what you can do with video these days. Do you follow our good friend Steve Dale on Facebook?
Yes, I do.
On his fan page, as everybody should, whether you have pets or not, because he's very entertaining and informative. I think Facebook.com/SteveDalePets and give Steve a like. He's nearing 12,000 likes.
What?
Yes, yes. He's blowing up. He's blowing it up.
I love following him all over the world. He goes everywhere.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
My gosh.
Yeah, he's leading a pretty good life over there. Let me tell you that. In fact, he will spend most of the month of January in Mexico.
Wow.
Yeah, he's doing it right. I don't blame him. I hope someday to be Steve Dale, at least his travels. But we just put out a video. It's a winter safety video tied into one of our sponsors.
Oh, nice.
And so... there was no winter here yet, really.
Yeah.
And this is about snow and sleet and protecting your pets.
Yeah.
So our writer wrote the script, and so we just put Steve in front of a green screen.
Mm-hmm.
And he got all bundled up, got his dog Hazel all bundled up, and then I made the triplets tear up about 30 pieces of paper into small pieces of snow, and I stood on a ladder over him shaking the snow.
That is so cool.
Oh,
that's funny. Yeah, but you can do wonders.
Oh, with the green screen stuff, too. If you watch this video for our winners, I think it's our winter safety video. It just came out this week. And you'll see that it's green screen because Steve's in front of it, but then there's a point where we make fun of the fact that we're pouring snow on him, so he sort of hooks up and the camera pulls back, and then you see that it's a green screen and I'm just shaking out the snow.
Right.
But then the second half of the video, then him and the dog are back inside and they're laying in front of a fireplace with a tree and all these presents, and that's just Steve in front of the green screen, but honest to God, when you look at the presents by his feet, it looks like they're really there. I'm impressed by it. I was like, wow, Jim did a really good job with that.
That is very cool. I'm looking. I don't know which video. Dr. Natalie Marks, Animals Among Us, December 21st, two organizations, Vitabone and Pet Partners working together. I don't see it yet.
It's there.
Oh, wait, there it is. Oh, my God, it's so cute. They got to tear the paper a little bit. Smaller.
A little bit more fun. Yeah. Oh, come on now.
You know what it looks like? Looks like paper on Steve.
Well, Roger, there's something called
disclosure.
The suspension
that's
of disbelief that we need to kind of enact when we're in a movie or a badly produced pet video. Come on now.
His dog is so cute.
Hazel looks like frozen solid.
I know. Get me out of this chicken outfit.
All right, 312-981-7200. We're going to talk a little bit about the Amtrak crash and safety on planes and trains and everywhere else, as well as drones. After the news, which is coming up in a couple minutes, 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala here with you, 720 WGN. Amtrak... So this terrible accident that happened in Washington could have been averted had they installed the proper system that was supposed to be installed. David Soucy will tell us all about that. He'll tell us about the resuming of the search for flight MH370 and why your drone could get you in trouble, not just by crashing it in the house, but actually if you have it outside. So we'll find out about all of that after the news. Is all the shopping done, Roger?
I have been a very bad boy this year.
Oh boy.
I used to be diligent in my holiday shopping.
Mm-hmm.
I used to get those musical copyrighted ornaments like Snoopy and all those movie related ones.
Sure.
Excuse me, for everyone around here that I worked with. That ended a couple of years ago when I retired from teaching and got sick. And saw my income cut by three quarters.
Yeah, that'll do that.
So since our resources are extremely thin nowadays,
sure,
I've not done that. And Bridget and I have discussed it, and we say, we're just buying for so-and-so and so-and-so.
Sure.
I have gotten away from sending Christmas cards. I used to send about 300 or 400 Christmas cards a year.
Oh, my gosh.
I had mailing lists I tried to maintain of all the people that I used to work with. And so we spent a lot of money, obviously, on stamps and cards. And I used to hand address them and sign them. And I've gotten away from that. I don't know why. I've got no excuse. Well, I really don't.
Because that would cost you about $200.
Well, but still, but that was some time ago, especially when I didn't keep, I tried keeping up with the lists when I would get like envelopes back, you know, address the unknown, that kind of stuff, or try to follow up. And it got to the point where I had no lists left. So I haven't done anything. I've only gotten one thing personally. Bridget and I have bought things for the grandkids.
Sure. That's who you should be buying
for. And some, she has, on our behalf, gotten some stuff for some family friends and family people. But I've only purchased one gift on my own, and that was my gift for her, which she does not know about yet.
Oh, good. Well, that's good. Well, that's the important gift. So good. Yeah. You know, you mentioned the Christmas cards. Colleen and I were finally sending out our Christmas cards today because naturally the Bubals will get you your Christmas card after Christmas. And
well, there's 12 days.
That's true. That's true. That's how we look at it. And she was, so we looked through what we've received to make sure we have the right address still on the labels and this and that. And she said, we are short 46 cards from what we normally get. Now, maybe those are all coming in the next day or two, but I wonder if just a lot of people aren't doing it as much anymore, especially because you're putting pictures up of your kids all year long on Facebook.
Yeah.
And I think that might be killing it.
And I'll tell you this, about a week or so ago, I wrote a poem on Facebook pertaining to what I just told you about having kept all these lists and letting it get away from me, and now I don't do it, and then saying, you know, and so happy holidays, Merry Christmas to all, using Facebook as my method of getting there, and like two people liked it. Which is weird. I even put a video with it. I thought it would, you know, and
take
nobody.
Off.
No.
Well, it's funny, though. I do see a lot of my friends like putting up pictures on Facebook and saying, hey, this is the card this year. Didn't get around to it. And I think we're sadly getting away from it. All right. We're getting away from things here. We got David Soucy coming up in just a minute. It's the Matt Bubala Show. Good morning, everybody. We're live from the Allstate Showcase Studio here in the Tribune Tower on the Magnificent Mile of Chicago, where it's beautiful outside, a little bit windy, but quite honestly, we cannot complain about the winter weather so far, though. It is going to turn nasty, they're saying, right about on Christmas Day and thereafter. And now, Roger, you know, we got to get to David here in a second, but real quick. My mom and aunt are supposed to be driving out on Christmas Eve.
From?
That's what we're celebrating. From Dyer, Indiana.
Okay.
That's my house. And if there is a threat, a hint, a glitter of snow in the air.
There's going to be.
Yeah, that's going to be a problem. Can we stop that so my mom still comes out and quit talking about it because she listens? And if she hears about it, she just might not come.
How about if I just say there's a 50% chance of...
How about if you say there's a 50% chance we don't see a drop of anything?
That's right, because it's 50-50.
Give me that.
Okay, you got it.
We just
got
to spin it the right way. All right, we'll get back to that later. Okay. David Soucy is the author of a book on Malaysian Airlines Flight 370. We talked to him, it's got to be over a year or two ago now, when his book, Malaysia Airlines Flight 370, Why It Disappeared and Why It's Only a Matter of Time Before This Happens Again, came out. But David was tweeting this week about the Amtrak crash in Washington. So I reached out to him, and he was willing to jump on the phone with us tonight. Good morning, David. How are you doing?
No, I'm doing great. How are you this week?
We're good. Thanks so much for jumping on with us again. How long has it been since the Malaysia book came out? Was that 2 years ago that you wrote it, or only a year ago?
I think it was just a year ago.
Just about a year. Okay. But we're coming up on the three-year anniversary of that crash pretty soon, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
In March, yeah. All right, we'll get to that in a minute. Let's talk about Amtrak, because you've been tweeting about that this week, and I'm reading stories that this positive train control system that was, I believe, mandated by Congress a long time ago. I read a story that it's been like five decades that they've been pushing for this to be installed and that it hasn't been done. What's going on with that?
Well, it's been pushed for a long time. The NTSB has been telling the Amtrak and all the authorities that they need to put this in. And in fact, Congress said, yes, it has to absolutely be in and installed in every train, public train, rail by 2015. So why wasn't it put in? Well, it's because Congress, like they usually do, they say, yeah, you have to do this, but they don't give any funding to make sure that it happens. So so the implementation is held up. And then when there's a deadly train crash, like again we had, just recently. Everybody says, why isn't this put in? And again, it you know, Congress has nobody to point at but themselves for not funding these things.
Why does Congress have to fund it? Why can't they make the people running the trains? Does Congress basically run Amtrak? Is it all the same funding? Or why can't they mandate, hey, if you're running on these trains and we're, you know, overseeing this, like if Congress mandated certain things for the safety of airlines, the airlines would have to do it, right?
Right. That was back in before 1978, that was just the opposite. In fact, Congress would have to provide funding or they would have to authorize increase in rates of flights and airlines so that they could afford to do these kinds of things. But since deregulation of the airlines, they haven't done that. Now it's up to the airlines. But with Amtrak and then the rail, it's kind of like a pseudo-government agency. It's funded, it's pseudo-funded by the government. The government said, hey, we're going to help you do this. And so it's kind of a regulated industry in that they have to say, yes, this is done, it's going to happen, and we're going to approve you to get additional funding for these kinds of things. So it is a bit confusing me because railways are not entirely privately funded.
Why doesn't Congress, like, you know, if they're, so does Congress have to provide the funding or can they tell the trains, the people running, operating the trains that they have to figure out how to do it? And is this supposed to be mandated on all the freight trains as well, or is this more just a passenger train system that should be set up?
Well, that's a really interesting question because should it be one versus the other? You have to look at the weighing of the risks. No, Congress could say, no, we're not going to fund it, but you've got to figure out how to make the money and how to make it happen. The concern about that and what the Amtrak and some of the railways are coming back and saying, well, yeah, we could put this in, but it'll make us go broke, and then we're going to have to come back to you guys for more supplemental funding to help us stay in business like you've done in the past. So it's a very complex issue. But the fact is, yes, Congress could just say simply, put it in or shut down these trains or come up with some other way. Come up with some other way to make sure that you're not driving a 200,000-ton device across these rails and then at 80 miles an hour when it should have been at 30 miles an hour on a brand new track.
Well,
they just put in.
At the very least, if they're putting in new things, why doesn't Congress, you would think Congress would at least enact some sort of legislation that, you know, there's a grandfather, okay, these trains have been running forever, you need to get to this eventually. But if you're putting in something new, if you're starting high-speed rail, if you're building new track, if you're spending money, this has to be part of it.
That's where the breakdown happened. I agree with you 100%. It's difficult to put something retrospectively into place. But when you're talking about a new track that was put in, it's installed, it's ready to go, why would they not put that into the new systems? Why would that not be mandated? And that's where this, I talk a lot about this. It's this complacency, the lack of, I call it the atrophy of vigilance, that people say, well, hey, we only had 3 deaths in the last how many years? So what's the chance that it's going to happen? It's not going to happen to me. It's not going to happen on my shift. So they start thinking, well, it's not that big a deal. And then they put it back on the back burner and nobody pushes it forward until all of a sudden we do have some catastrophic event like we had last week again. And it raises the flag and people say, we have to do something about this, but our memories are short.
Yeah.
Forget about that.
That's the thing is this, I guess, does this come down to, is this sort of like with the, what we always heard, what was it, the Ford Pinto, that the payoffs they were making didn't exceed what they'd have to spend to fix it, so they didn't fix it? Is this going to be something where 3 people dead is not going to be enough to force them to say, hey, we have to spend this money to fix this?
Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen. Again, now again, Congress could have mandated this and held the railways accountable for the 2015 deadline, but they did not. They actually extended it till 2018. So now in 2018, we'll see what happens. Are they gutsy enough to just say no? I mean, these industries, both airlines and rail and every other kind of transportation industry, have very heavy lobbying, and they really put a lot of emphasis on not having to spend extra money and try to keep their profitability up, of course. So there's a lot of pressure on Congress not to do that, to move this deadline out. But I feel confident, I'm pretty sure that people are going to say, hey, enough's enough. When are we going to see these trains come off the rails and end up in somebody's backyard and kill families? And you asked a good question earlier about, is it cargo or is it just passengers? And yes, it's both. The biggest fear I have about this is that there are tens of thousands of tankers that are out there carrying highly volatile fuels right now. They were designed for just, you know, a crude oil at one point, and now they're being used for actually ignitable fuels. And these tankers have been outlawed in Canada. 10 years ago, they were outlawed in Canada. They're not even able to be used in Canada yet. In the United States, we have tens of thousands of these things going right through our neighborhoods. And without positive train control, you have that risk of those things coming off. And you'll see if we go back about a year and a half, there was an accident when one of these came off of the rail up in New Jersey, and it caused a fire. It got down into the rivers. It polluted the rivers. It started the rivers on fire. It was had about 3 fatalities from it as well back then. And so anyway, there's a lot more risk than what people might think about not having this positive train control.
Well, I know you're saying that you think this will be enough to start pushing it through for people to step up and say something, but not to be political about this, but we are in a time right now where the administration is pushing for fewer and fewer regulations. So are we in a time where Congress or the administration would really push hard for this to be done if it's going to cost a business so much money?
Well, they've approved a statute, so you've got the statutory level, and then you've also got the regulatory level. So it is a statute, and it is supposed to be invoked. It is supposed to be in place in 2018 countrywide across the whole entire country. Now, the regulatory agencies, the people that actually regulate and make the rules that say, well, Congress will say in the statute, this is what has to be done, but now we're talking about how it's going to be done, and so that's the part that's falling apart. That, I think, has momentum now. The idea that, yes, they agree it's a good thing to do, it's something that has to happen. You know, I spent most of my career, 17 years, fighting to Congress for additional funding for the Federal Aviation Administration. And when you start talking about lives and you start talking about statistics and how many people are going to die if you don't do something, that's when it starts getting sold. That's when people and Congress and Senate and even local governments jump on board and say, yeah, we've got to make this thing happen. So I think now there's some leadership in place that's going to do that, that's going to take that angle. Say, are you going to want to be the senator or the congressman that says, no, we're going to extend this for 3 more years and then wait and see if there's a death and you're held accountable for it? No, that's not what's going to happen. There's people that need to get this thing done, and I think that momentum's there at the regulatory level.
We're speaking with David Soucie at David_Soucie on Twitter. His website, whyplanescrash.com. We'll talk a little bit about Malaysian Airlines Flight 370 when we come back. Also, what's the warning he needs to give people about drone usage? Might be getting a drone for the holidays that is exploding. Lots of people have them. I've only crashed mine in the house so far, but we'll hear what David says that you got to be careful of next. 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. David Soucie is on the phone with us. We were talking about the Amtrak accident and what's happened from that. Tell me a little bit about drones, David. I was telling the story earlier. I have a drone I bought for work last year, and I haven't used it enough. I took it out during the eclipse this year, and then that night, my 16-year-old son was in high school. He wasn't home during the eclipse, so it's the first time he had seen it. I'm like, yeah, you want to see me fly this thing? I thought, I'll just lift it up off the ground, put it back down. And I didn't take into account that inside it's a little different because of the walls and where the air pushes off of. And I crashed it right into a wall and tore up the wall with the rotors. And so that's dangerous. Be careful in the house. But we also have to be a little more cognizant of where we're flying them outside as well, right?
Yes, absolutely. So the reason for that, too, one is safety. But to be honest with you, right now, there has been the very first drone pilot that's been held liable for an aircraft accident. And it was upheld in court, and this guy ended up being liable for running into a military helicopter and crashing that military helicopter. So this is a big deal. And what the biggest deal about it was that the area had been designated as a temporary flight-restricted area. So anything below 300 feet, or excuse me, above 300 feet had been limited. It was like, nobody flies there, commercial airplanes, private airplanes, no one can fly there. And that's published on what they call NOTAMs, the Notice to Airmen reports. Now, this is something that you don't think of as a pilot drone, a private drone pilot.
Yeah.
The commercial guys, yeah, they're pilots. They take the tests and they know what to do. But the challenge here is that you go out in your backyard, if you're anywhere near an airport, and even if you're not, you might have a military operation going on that you don't even know about. So unless you check those NOTAMs, you could fly your aircraft up to 400 feet, which many of these new ones will do, the DJI Phantom or the Inspire, yeah, any of these you know, $1,000 to $2,000 machines that are out there, they'll easily fly up to those altitudes. And you're flying along thinking everything's wonderful. You run right into a helicopter and you crash it and you kill somebody. You know, so that this is what happens when that drone goes into the engine of a turbine helicopter. It's going to take it down. There's no question about it. So that's the caution that I put out there right now is, sure, go out and fly your drone, do it in a safe area, do it where you're supposed to do it, but don't take it lightly. It sounds terrible to say, but this is not a toy. Do not try this at home, but you will, and there's a great safe way to do that. The FAA has a lot of information. When you buy that drone, it's going to tell you what websites to go to check your area, to see if you're safe, to see if you're, you don't know, you might be within a couple hundred feet of a hospital that has a heliport on it. You just don't know where you are exactly unless you're really familiar with aviation.
The guy that was held liable, was he in an area where he should have known better, or was this solely because was he in an area that he never would have expected there's any restrictions, but there was, and he hadn't even known to check this website?
Well, no, he didn't know to check the website, and that was his defense. He said, "Well, I didn't know that I was supposed to check this," but that's what other people say, is that, well, unless you're going to use these for commercial purposes, if you're going to use it for real estate to take video of real estate, or you're going to use it for inspecting a roof of a hail prone area, someplace that got hit with hail, and a lot of these insurance adjusters are using them now. So you think, well, I'm in a safe area. It's just a residential area. I'm going to be flying over this guy's house. But in this case, there was a temporary flight restriction. In other words, they had not typically, if you just look at the regular maps that say, here's where I can fly and here's where I can't, then this would have said, yes, you can fly there. Mm-hmm. But a temporary flight restriction, that's where this guy got in trouble, because these things are published. They're out there. They're available. You go to the FAA website, and it tells you, here's where you can't fly, and from this period to this period. And it had been reserved, I think, for 2 days over this specific area, because they were doing a military testing or run through there somehow. And the typical person like you or I that go out and just buy a drone and say, hey, I'm going to start flying it, you wouldn't know this. But if you go to the FAA and you just look up FAA.gov, and then you go in there and look at the drone section, drone pilot areas, it'll tell you where you shouldn't be flying. And I would check that and keep up abreast of that when you go fly, especially if you're going to fly over 300 feet. Most people don't. You know, 300 feet is pretty dang high.
Yeah.
For a drone, you're going to try to keep it in your eyesight. You're going to try to keep it where you have it close by. But speaking of your story, though, by the way, I crashed my drone, and I'm a professional pilot doing this. You know, and it was pretty funny. I have this thing. There's a thing called Follow Me on there, and I hit Follow.
Yeah, and it'll follow you around, right? The signal from your phone.
The wrong guy. It was following somebody else. It wasn't following me. And so this guy has started, like, the weather started kind of coming in, and he's like, I'm going to go inside. So he goes inside, and where'd my drone go? Right into the side of the building. It was just followed him right over there.
Oh, geez. You know, it's crazy, though, because I think we don't think, you know, because I have one of those DJI Phantoms. It's not very big. It's like two shoeboxes maybe put together, big and wide. It's not huge. So you wouldn't even think that. How does it take down a Black Hawk helicopter?
Well, if it goes into the engine, see, you've got a turbine engine spinning at 34,000 RPMs, and, you know, you throw something in there, it's not like, and these blades are made of titanium. I mean, they're heavy blades, but nonetheless, you get that in there and it plugs up and clogs up certain areas. It's like a bird going through, you know, and if a bird goes through there, it can cause a lot of trouble, but it won't usually take one down.
Yeah.
We're talking about mechanisms here. We're not talking about,
we're talking about metal and plastic and things that don't tear apart as easily as a bird. So this guy's held liable for a Black Hawk helicopter. Isn't that like $20 million or something crazy?
Yeah, I think they're going to be asking for him for a long time. And I don't think that they're looking at it from a civil perspective and also from a criminal perspective. So this guy could be in a lot of trouble. But to be honest with you, I don't think this is something we're going to see a lot of. It's just that this guy was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I think the FAA and
they want to make an example of him because they don't want this happening again. Right.
Absolutely right. And to try to raise awareness of it. And that's one of the reasons I appreciate the opportunity for you to let me talk on your show here, because you reach a lot of people, and I want to make sure that the word gets out about this.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's easy to do. It's something you need to look at, and you know, just keep it keep it around below the trees for a little while here until you figure out if you're in a safe area or
yeah,
not.
Yeah, I'll definitely take a look at that site next time I get that thing up in the air. Okay, we only have a couple minutes left. What is the latest on MH370? I saw on your Twitter feed that there is a new search resuming around early January. So what's going on?
Well, there's a company called Infinity, and what they're trying to do is talk to Malaysia and say, hey, we're not going to charge you for this unless we find it, but if we find it, you're going to owe us a lot of money. And so I mean, it's kind of an interesting perspective way to do it, but there's some new information that shows that all the millions, tens of millions of dollars that they spent looking for it was in the wrong area. They're about 120 miles south, and the reason they figured that out is because they did this analysis of the parts they found and said that over that period of time, they would have had to come from an area closer than where they were searching. So they're going to move this search area up to the north around that big arc. Remember the arc that we talked about a long time ago? That arc has moved to the north, and so they're going to try to go search out in there about 25,000 square kilometers. It's still a big area, but they're going to do it.
Are you surprised that more parts weren't found once some were found?
Well, I wasn't until they found an interior part, because originally they had found pieces of the wings, and we did the analysis on those and found those, and that would make sense that the wings, that it made some kind of a landing that would keep the integrity of the fuselage together, and then the fuselage would have gone down together. Mm-hmm. But now they found a couple of parts that came from the interior of the aircraft that tells me that it broke up into a lot of pieces. Mm-hmm. So if that's the case, I am surprised that there weren't more found. But it's a big ocean, and it spreads out so quickly. There could be parts all over the coast and not be found yet still.
Do you think in the coming year they will find definitively, here's where the plane crashed?
I think they will. I really do. Last year, if you'd asked me that question, I think you did. I didn't think there was a chance in hell they would have found it. But yeah. But looking at the new technologies, how they're using them, I think they're going to narrow in on it. There's still quite a bit of interest in it. And I've been approached by a lot of people over in China because I ended up with about 300,000 followers in China. I don't even know what they're saying because the translation is terrible. But but because almost all the people on board there were Chinese people, and the only way they get their news is through our tweets and things like that. So I think there's enough interest and enough people with money that really would love to find that. And there's a lot we can learn from it. As far as causes, there's a new company that came out with a new underwater locator beacon that would have prevented this. There's a lot of people approaching me about talking about some of their new technologies that would change the way that all went down. And I really admire what they're doing on that.
Yeah. Real quick, you mentioned when we emailed that you're working on a new book. When is that scheduled to be out, and what's that on?
It's going to be about another 6 to 8 months before it comes out. I've been lecturing for about a year on this, but it's called Dare to Repair Your Thinking, and it's about this atrophy of vigilance. It's the way that we think over time. If we gear ourselves towards automation and automated cockpits, and even on a personal level, to be able to think that you're safe as you walk around with your cell phone across the street and you get run over, and that's just the idea of thinking that you're safer than you really are. And so your mind literally atrophies. It stops looking for risks and when you think you're safe. And it's not something that just comes back because, I'm aware now. It's something you have to practice. And so we've come up with some tools with a couple of neuropsychologists from Harvard and one from out in California as well. And I can't say their names yet, but it's a great collaboration. And I think it's something that will do a lot of people a lot of good to keep your awareness and situational awareness and yourself. It'll help you be a better person, I think, too.
Sounds fascinating. I can't wait to talk to you about it. WhyPlanesCrash.com is the website. Follow David on Twitter @David_Soucie. That's Soucie. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone with us. Can't wait to talk to you again, David.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
All right, sir. We will talk to you again soon. You heard the tone. We're a little bit late. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Let's get the news upstairs with Roger. Good Good morning, everybody. Matt Bubal here with you. 720 WGN 309 in the morning. Thank you for the news, Roger Badish. I'm just sitting here enjoying some Papanino's pizza.
Oh, that's right. You got it in already.
We got a pizza. Yeah, come on down.
All right.
Pizza tastes really good at 3 in the morning.
I know it does.
I can't tell. Is this a really good pizza or is it 3 in the morning really good pizza? Because it tastes really good to me. And I'm like, wow, but I wonder if what I think at 7 o'clock at night.
You know, I had a piece last week.
Yeah.
And it was really good pizza.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
But that could just be
makes it even better because it's at 3 a.m.
It does. Isn't it like...
And there's no one else open now for pizza. Yeah.
There's like nothing around. There's nobody out on the street.
Right.
And I'm up in the middle of the night. If I was at home and I was up at 3 in the morning, you know what would happen? Colleen's asleep on the couch. I'd be sneaking over to the fridge, seeing what I could eat. And I tiptoe around and I quietly do it. And I hope that the microwave doesn't wake her up when I eat something.
Now you're doing for, 38 states to hear you do it.
Yeah, well...
By the way, I did.
They don't rat on me.
I did a jib jab for you and Jess.
Oh God!
And Plyer and I forgot who else. You'll like it.
I'm sure I will like it. You last did one. When did we have one that we were all on Thanksgiving? What was the last?
I think
one
I
you did
a. Oh, it was Thanksgiving. Wait, Halloween. I did one.
Maybe it was Halloween. John was very funny telling you that you're keeping jib jab open. Yeah, the only reason they still exist.
I know.
I was laughing. I was telling him. Tell Roger to put it on his MySpace page.
I never had one of those.
I never had a MySpace page either.
I came, Johnny come lately to all that stuff.
Yeah, I hear you. All right. Hey, our buddy Jason Steffen is on the phone from out in Las Vegas. He is an associate professor in the Department of Physics and Astronomy.
My old stomping grounds
at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Hey, Jason, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good. Doing well. How are you?
Good. Thanks for jumping on the phone with us. How are things in Nevada?
Oh, it's really cold here. Like, got into the 50s today.
Oh, boy. Wow, you suffering. Terrible. Well, actually, the 50s, and here it was in the 30s, 40s, so that's not too bad. Although, like, on Christmas and afterwards, it's going to get into the teens, and then wind chills below zero, I think, sometime next week. So you'll be enjoying it then for sure.
It's supposed to warm up. We're supposed to get... pushing up towards 70 again.
Nice. Have you overall enjoyed the move, being out in the weather?
Yeah, it's good because I grew up in Utah, so this is kind of back in my neck of the woods. There's family nearby and stuff like that. So,
oh, good, excellent. Okay, let's talk a little bit about. Let's start with the Kepler mission because there was supposed to be a big announcement this week, and I missed what the announcement was. What was the big Kepler announcement?
So the big Kepler announcement was that there were a couple of planetary systems that had been studied quite a bit in the past, but there was someone who teamed up with a collaborator at Google, and they used machine learning to analyze the data again. And in doing so, they discovered a new planet in each of those systems. So there's one of the systems that had seven planets in it, and they discovered an eighth one, which makes it so that there's at least as many planets in that solar system or that planetary system as there is in our own. And then the second system, I think there were originally four planets that were known, and they discovered a fifth one.
And so why is this exciting news? It sounds like somebody screwed up, you guys missed planets, but that's not the excitement out of this. What's the excitement out of this?
I think the excitement is a few things. One is that it's the first time that this type of search algorithm, like this machine learning, had been applied to Kepler data to make a discovery. And also the systems that these were discovered around. Because these aren't obvious signals, it was a signal from a relatively small planet. So the one that was found in the Kepler 90 system, although that number really might not mean a whole lot, was only like 12% larger than the size of the Earth. So these are really small planets around stars that already have a lot of other planets around them. So it's exciting in that it's a new technique that had been applied.
With most of the planets you guys have found, have they been, I want to say they're a lot larger than Earth, right? You found planets in habitable zones, but you haven't found planets that seem to be really, really related, not related to, but very similar to Earth, because that would make a huge difference, wouldn't it? If you found a planet, but it was three times larger than Earth, that would change a lot of what that meant for any life on that planet, correct?
Yeah, so most of the planets, the typical Kepler planet is about 2.5 times the size of the Earth, and orbits with an orbital period around 10 days. So there have been planets discovered by Kepler that are slightly smaller than the Earth, but not very many of them compared to the majority. So it's only a relatively small handful that are smaller than the Earth that have been discovered.
So if there was a planet that was 2.5 times the size of Earth, that would mean that gravity would be insanely greater there, correct?
It depends on, I guess, where you're talking about, because for most of these planets that are a few times the size of the Earth, the atmospheres on them are, they're thick, but they're not like Jupiter or Uranus or Neptune thick. Mm-hmm. So for example, the typical Kepler planet that's, you know, 2 to 3 times the size of the Earth would only have an atmosphere that's maybe 100 or 1,000 times thicker than Venus, which, I mean, it's thick compared to the Earth, but it's not like Uranus or Neptune, for example, where a quarter of their mass is in the atmosphere.
Okay.
So it's still a small fraction of the mass, you know, like 1 or 2% of the mass is in the atmosphere. It's just that the atmosphere happens to be kind of fluffy. So at the cloud tops, the gravity wouldn't be all that different. When you get down to the surface, the gravity would be, you know, maybe 1.5 or 2 times that of the Earth.
So it's not that bad. See, I always thought that the size of the planet is what really made up the gravity. It's not that. It has to do with the atmosphere as well?
Well, it has to do with the density overall. Mm-hmm. And so if you include the atmosphere, then the planets actually aren't all that dense. The density of these planets in some cases is less than styrofoam, and then quite a bit less than water.
Interesting.
But if you remove the atmosphere and go down to the presumably rocky surface that's underneath it, then the gravity wouldn't be all that different than it is on the Earth. A little bit more, but not a whole lot more.
Huh. Okay, that's pretty fascinating. And what do you make of where we're at these days? We just released, or something happened this week where the government released, because the world is so crazy, we don't pay attention to this. Somebody tweeted tonight, that what world are we living in that the U.S. government basically acknowledges it's been hunting aliens here on Earth forever and has all this video and we don't even talk about it. Do you dismiss all of that as just crazy phenomena that happen in the sky sometimes? And, you know, because you know a lot more about this than most of us, and the basic fact is that any alien life that came here would have to come from so ridiculously impossibly far away, it'd be hard to imagine them just flying planes that our F-18s are seeing, you know, in the skies, right?
Yeah, I don't think that there's been any aliens visiting. Although it's not... certainly, if you go back in the past, there have been, and it sounds like there still are, programs to identify unidentified flying objects. That doesn't necessarily mean that they have to be from some other planetary system. Mm-hmm. So I actually just read a book recently called Area 51 that talks about some of the history of things that happened out kind of in my neck of the woods now.
Yeah.
With the development of the U-2 and the SR-71 spy planes and other programs to identify, basically to locate and identify anything that they hadn't seen before, or that, there was concerns that the Russians may have been.
Yeah. Do you think that's what this mostly is when we have weird video of weird things or lights in the sky, things like that? Do you think it's man-made, that it's governments working on things, or just a weird light phenomena that we don't understand or don't realize what it is? Do you think there's generally an explanation you could find for every one of those things?
Yeah, I think that it's all man-made to a large extent. There can be instances, so we don't understand like all of the manifestations of lightning. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it's only, you know, we're still finding different kinds of lightning bolts, like ways that lightning interacts with the atmosphere. So also there's a lot of things that can happen in terms of like cloud structures and things like that can happen near mountains. That could also, you know, look funny in the night sky.
Yeah.
As far as the video footage, I haven't seen any of the footage, but, you know.
Oh, you need to watch some of it. It's pretty
now
cool.
There's all sorts of mosquito-sounding aircraft that are flying around.
Yeah.
From high school kids that are trying to.
Well, this was stuff you need to check on some of it. When we go to the break, you should Google it, or when you get a chance, look at some of the video that was released, because it is interesting. And these F-18 pilots are seeing things like, what in the world is that? I know there's some video, there's a lot of video out there of people on planes filming stuff, and that's probably light or something, who knows what. But these videos taken from the cockpit of government pilots that seem amazed by what they're seeing, that tends to make you go, well, wait a minute, what in the world is that? Now, maybe it's just Russia's working on something, or somebody else is working on something, I guess. Tell us where you think we are, though, with the Kepler mission and with the search for habitable planets. You guys are finding that there are billions and billions and billions and billions of planets, and maybe more than that. And you're looking for ones that look like they could sustain life, and you're finding them in every system, in every place. And you haven't found the exact doppelganger of Earth yet, but it's probably out there somewhere. Whether we'll ever find it, we don't know. But where is your feeling on, yes, there must be life elsewhere if there's this much infinite resource of places that could sustain life?
I personally wouldn't be surprised if there's life in other places, because planets are. I think the official count now is like at 2 bazillion is the actual number. The estimates based on what we've gotten from the Kepler spacecraft, the mission and the estimates that we've gotten from that, are that at least a third of stars have planets orbiting them, and the typical number of planets per system is about 3. So just with planets like the ones that Kepler discovered, there's basically 1 per star in the galaxy. There are planet sizes that Kepler was not able to see. It wasn't sensitive enough to identify planets a whole lot smaller than Earth, for example. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't able to see even solar system analogs. So it's quite possible that the planetary systems are even more common than what Kepler provides. The estimate is basically there are at least this many planets, and possibly more, and I would say likely more. So the mission itself is operating in it's been repurposed for what's called the K2 mission, mm-hmm. Where it's, because it can't point as accurately as it needs to in order to get measurements in the original field of view, like where it was originally pointed, they've pointed it at different parts of the sky, where they can use, they can basically use the light bouncing off of the spacecraft to help steer it. So that's kind of interesting. But coming up next year, there's a new mission that's going to be launching called TESS, the Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite.
Okay.
And TESS it's similar to Kepler in that it's looking for planets as they transit the host star. But where Kepler stared at a single part of the sky for 4 years, TESS is actually going to cover the entire sky, or the majority of the sky, like 90% of it. And it won't observe for as long. It will observe for like a month or 2 months at a time as it searches around the whole sky. But it's going to find all of the Kepler-like systems or transiting planetary systems that are brighter. So because it can survey the whole sky, it will be able to see objects around the brighter stars. Kepler had to look at dim stars because it had to look at stars that are far away in order to get the number of targets to make the full survey. It had some field of view, and you had to fit 130,000 stars in that field of view, which means that you have to look at distant stars, where TESS is going to survey the whole sky, and so it's going to be able to get discover planets around systems that are out closer to the Earth. And those ones are a lot more amenable to ground-based follow-up programs. So they're going to be 100 times brighter, and so we'll be able to study their atmospheres in more detail. We'll be able to study, look for other planets that don't transit in those systems with ground-based facilities. Because they're so much brighter, rather than taking an hour or an hour and a half to get a single data point from the ground, it'll take like 5 minutes. And so we can get a lot more information for these nearby systems.
All right, let me ask you, because, you know, I know that for anybody to have made it here, they'd have to have developed the technology so long ago, and things would have had to have traveled so far, messages, whatever. But is anything near us, was it all formed at the same time as us? Like, is everything within, I guess, our solar system, or our, not our solar system, but our galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy? Was the Milky Way galaxy all formed at the same time, or is it possible that we were, you know, that Earth has been here for whatever billions of years, but there's these other stars that have been around for billions more, so there's a possibility that life formed billions of years earlier, and they would be advanced enough that maybe they've developed ways to travel?
So I don't know about developing, like something developing to the point where they would travel through interstellar space, like to find other places. But our own galaxy, the oldest stars in our galaxy are about 10 billion years old, okay. Sometimes a little bit more than that, 10 to 12 billion years old. The youngest stars in our galaxy are forming now. And so our sun is basically halfway between the oldest stars and the youngest stars.
Okay.
When stars form, they tend to form in clusters. So you'll form 1 to 10,000 stars at once in a given region. So a lot of the pictures that Hubble sent back with these like clouds of material with different shapes and stuff like that, those are tend to be star forming regions, and you'll form a few thousand stars at a time in those regions. And so all those stars will form at once with the same composition, but those clusters of stars, they're not gravitationally bound. They form together, but then as they move around and interact with the galaxy, that cluster of stars will evaporate and the stars will kind of spread out throughout the galaxy. So our own, siblings, the other stars that formed at the same time the sun did, aren't anywhere nearby where the sun is located now. So like Alpha Centauri, this star with planets going around it, that's nearest to us, wasn't a star that formed at the same time that the sun did. And it wasn't a star that formed in the same neighborhood as the sun.
Well, do you think, so there are stars out there that are billions of years older than our star. Should we be looking at those stars to try to find signs of life because they would have had more time?
It's not obvious that that's the best approach to take. Basically, you want to look at stars of all ages. The reason that the old stars may not be the best targets is that a lot of the elements that go into forming planets, like iron and copper and nickel and oxygen and stuff like that, those elements are formed in stars. Mm-hmm. And so if you go back to the earliest stars that are formed, they're actually depleted in those elements, because it takes the first generation of stars that are metal poor. So to an astronomer, a metal is anything heavier than helium. So stars that are metal poor, meaning they don't have a lot of oxygen, they don't have a lot of carbon, they don't have a lot of iron, those form first, and they produce this material inside them. And then when they die, they release that material out into the galaxy. And then the next generation of stars inherits that material. And if you want to form a planet like the Earth, then you have to have these elements around. So if you're looking at the oldest stars, they tend to have fewer metals. And as a consequence, there's less planet-forming material in their vicinity. Mm. So you still get planets around them, but the planets that you get might not be as metal-rich or as ubiquitous as what we have in the solar system.
So you're saying that my idea of let's look at the older stars, they'll have life there, is not necessarily going to work?
It's not necessarily going to work. It doesn't mean that it's a bad question, right? Because you want to understand how do planets form under as many conditions as you can, so that we can improve our planet formation theory to the point where we might be able to predict how many planets there are that are habitable. We're not there yet to the point where we can make those kinds of predictions.
I just want to know that life's out there, Jason. I just want to call you up one night. You go, hey, by the way, I'm all in now. There's definitely life out there, because you're not giving me that. I want to know in my lifetime, before I croak, you're going to be on the air with me and go, dude, we did it. There's life out there. Huh? Who would have thunk?
Well, what I can say is that I have this box that's up to the side of my head that's talking to me about that's has some life on the other end of it, but I don't know of any life that's been discovered off of the planet Earth.
But that's what I want. I know there's life here, but I think it would make such a difference in our world, honestly, in the way we all interact with each other on this planet if we knew we weren't alone. We would take away some of our self-importance, I think, if we realize there are bigger things out there than our little squabbles here on this rock. I think that would be really cool for us.
So I don't doubt that there's other life on planets out there, but we haven't seen any yet.
Right.
So in the coming, you know, the planets that we'll be discovering with this new mission that's launching, those are going to be the ones where we can study in more detail the atmospheres of the planets. And so there are things you can look for in the atmospheres of planets that would be indicative of life on the surface. And so, you know, we're making baby steps with each new iteration of missions to look for things.
What's amazing, though, is even with all the light we produce, all the energy we burn on this planet, somebody who had their Kepler mission going at Alpha Centauri or some other area of the sky, and they're looking at our sun and realizing that there are planets around our star, there's no way they'd ever be able to tell that there's actually life on this planet, right?
I wouldn't say, I mean, never say never. So if you have... If there was life at Alpha Centauri, you know, something that close, and they had a mission like Kepler, then there's a, or, you know, if they were at the current state of technology that we are, then there's a relatively good chance that they would know that the Earth was there. You know, it'd be right on the edge of their detectability. It would be right on the edge of our detectability if we were at Alpha Centauri looking back at our solar system. Mm-hmm. But, you know, certainly Jupiter would have been found. And so they would have known that there's something there. And as soon as you find Jupiter, then you know, what else is there is
yeah.
the
Next
fairly
question.
Obvious question, at least to my human mind.
But with the technology, they'd see Earth, but they wouldn't see light. They wouldn't sense anything human-made or outside the norm of a planet with the technology we're using, correct?
Not with the technology that we have now, but I can pretty much guarantee that if there was, if we were to discover an Earth-sized planet in the habitable zone of a nearby star, that the technology needed, that the money would be freed up to some extent to look more carefully at it.
So we need to find that Earth-sized planet.
It certainly wouldn't hurt our, you know, the science funding in it.
Yeah. All right, well, that's
we have around the world. So.
That's our task for you for 2018 then, Jason. Let's find us that Earth-sized planet in a habitable zone. Can we do that?
Yeah, let me get my wallet out and we'll see if we got...
You've got data. Comb through it. It's in there somewhere, right? I mean, that's kind of the thing, isn't it? That there's such an immense amount of data that you guys are going through all the time that you might have already... Is it possible that it's already been found, but it just hasn't been able to be combed through yet?
It's possible that... You know, this machine learning algorithm that was turned loose on the Kepler data, that's pushing about the limits of what we can probably do. Mm-hmm. We might be able to squeeze a few more planets out like that, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the ones that we find are going to be the kind that we're looking for.
Right.
But, you know, certainly there are signals that are just under the noise that... You know, future generations of planet surveys. There's TESS coming up. TESS isn't going to be quite as sensitive as Kepler, but then there's another mission that's scheduled for about 7 or 8 years from now, coming from the European Space Agency. And that one is back to roughly the same sensitivity that Kepler had. So.
All right, I've got a line for you.
We'll see.
I got a line for you, Jason. You probably speak on this from time to time, right? Have to give presentations, lectures, things like that.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So here's what you're going to do. This would be great. So you just said that, you know, basically you're never finding the right one. You're never finding that Earth-sized one. You're finding the big ones, the small ones, this or that. So I think you start with this. You say, you know, folks, looking for exoplanets is a lot like going to a nude resort. It's never the people you want to see naked, and we're never finding the planet we really want to find.
That's That's one thing I could say. I'll just make sure that my wife and kids aren't around when I do it.
Well, your wife could be around. She would understand that joke. But your kids, maybe you don't want those questions asked. But I imagine, are they there when you're giving presentations and lectures on this?
They come occasionally. If I'm giving a public talk, then they'll come.
Well, this probably
I just got back from a conference in China. So
yeah, how was that? That's right. I texted you last week, and you couldn't do it. You were in China. What was going on there?
It was good. So it was a really good, productive meeting. People getting ready for the upcoming missions and kind of wrapping our heads around what we've already discovered with the Kepler mission. Had some unusual. I tried all sorts of. Interesting food like chicken feet and those eggs, like the famous eggs that are preserved eggs that are kind of dark green and brown. So tried some of that. That was quite the experience.
It sounds like it. Well, I appreciate you jumping on the phone as always. Have a great Christmas and New Year with your family. And I look forward to the time in 2018 when we talk, when you say, hey, guess what? Either we found the Earth-sized planet or we found life altogether. I won't set the bar too high for you, but one of those two in 2018, Jason, we're going to do it.
Yeah, that'll be the New Year's resolution, I guess.
I like that. I like that. The New Year's resolution for Kepler. We're finding that Earth-sized planet, people. Somebody's going to give a big pep talk in the room as you guys go after it. All right, Jason, thanks so much for staying up late with us. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you sometime in 2018.
All right. Have a Merry Christmas.
All right, buddy. You too. Jason Steffen from the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. We're late for the news. It's 3:35. Let's get upstairs and check some headlines. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN Radio. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. That's Roger Badish up in the newsroom. I'm Matt Bubala in the Allstate Showcase studio here on the Magnificent Mile. Producer Jess Raines is behind the glass.
Did you see your jib jab yet?
No, I did not.
You should.
I haven't had a chance.
All right.
I have not had a chance. I'm too busy thinking about life and other planets.
I know. And you
I
know,
just wish
I used to
find that already.
When I came back upstairs, because I was listening to the thing, I find it fascinating. I took astronomy in high school because Evanston Township High School actually has its own planetarium, which is really cool.
Think about that, Raj. I was in high school almost 30 years ago. You were in high school a little bit longer ago than that.
Yeah.
Think about how little they knew compared to what they know now. How crazy is that?
I know.
They're
it's just amazing.
An insane amount of stuff.
Yeah. So I like this stuff, but as I'm coming upstairs, I'm starting to think, you know what? I'm right now more worried about making sure there's gas in the car than I am about life on other planets, which is the weird, I think it's an age thing.
Well, or it's a money thing.
Well, no, I mean, but in my youth, I was fascinated by that stuff.
Well, you're just kind of filled with other things you're trying to work on and get figured out right now.
Well, I guess, but I really, what he was saying was very fascinating.
I think it's a good escapism to dream about and think about what's out there. I think we need to keep that, to keep not overly focusing on the little mundane pieces of our lives, but to try to think of sometimes that bigger picture and what else is out there. Why are we here?
And here's the other thing I was thinking of when you were asking him the questions. We're just talking about life. But I think when people think about that, and I think it's probably been advanced by all the science fiction shows that have been on TV and the movies and stuff, I'm thinking that most people think that life on other planets is humanoid in features. And in other words, eyes, some sort of communication capability, a way to breathe, that kind of, and a way to consume nutrients. But I just... even on like Star Wars, you got two eyes, a mouth.
Some of them do.
You know, most of them do.
Yeah.
And that's and I know it's hard for even science fiction movie makers or TV shows to think outside the box. All right, the thing that comes to mind right now is the Blob.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big mass of jelly eating up people and living somehow. And that's an alien? I don't know. what would an alien look like? Probably depends on which planet they're from.
It's a good question.
Yeah. I mean, that when he was talking about that, that entered my mind. What are we looking for?
It's interesting because the way Jason has talked about it before, and the texter says space, so much of our oceans are a mystery.
Well, yeah. Have you seen some of the stuff they pulled off the ocean floor?
No.
Some of the animals? Some of the fish? If you can call that weirdest looking things.
But that's not, and that's interesting, but that's already here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but we've never seen it. We've never gotten down that far.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Well, I'm just not as intrigued as something on another planet, in another part of the universe.
I know.
That's crazy to me. And I think with speaking with Jason before, there's theories that life starts somewhat spontaneously and now I know we'd say, well, maybe that's where religion comes in, and is there a creator who does these things?
Mm-hmm.
But he said that with the right molecules and things like this, life forms.
But that's our understanding of which molecules are required.
But I think then the thinking might be maybe life forms in the same way in any habitable planet.
Well,
maybe there are human beings.
I don't know.
You know, and it's interesting because of all the War of the Worlds type movies we have,
mm-hmm.
Independence Day, different things like that, where people are coming to our planet.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see a lot of those movies where it's human being types who come to the planet.
Yeah, but they have human being type features.
They do, but it's always something different, right? It's always some
long
sort of different
snout,
being.
Pointed ears, whatever. Fins for arms.
And I know there's been talk about this, but that would be more of an interesting scenario to me is we finally make contact, people come to our planet, but I just got the meanest.
And then here's the other thing. And you were talking about gravitational pulls. All right, what if life forms formed on a planet that had different gravity than the Earth?
Yeah.
They would not exist on our planet. They would be crushed or go floating off into the atmosphere.
Okay.
You know, I mean, that was the idea behind War of the Worlds. They succumbed to our basic diseases, our normal germs that we have learned to live with.
Hannah texts, that's why the aliens from Arrival were so awesome. What was Arrival? Did I see
it? Was that the one where she was...
I don't know, right?
She spoke, they were writing letters and letters on the wall. It looked like they were whale-type creatures in a water or a cloud.
I did not know that movie.
I did see it, and I thought it was awesome, except towards the end, when I'm like, well, that was kind of a cheap way to go out of the movie. Seriously.
Was it an M. Night Shyamalan movie?
No, God, no. I won't go to those anymore.
He does not. Just said M. Night Shyamalan makes the best movies.
Oh,
he made one really
here.
Good movie.
Not even that.
He made one really good movie.
Tell her stop yelling.
He made one really good movie.
Which
that was
one?
The Sixth Sense.
It was okay.
Oh, no, that was really good. You got to admit, when you saw that, you're like, whoa.
Halfway through.
You did not.
Done. No. Yes.
No, you did not figure it out. The Hateful Eight, I thought it was Quentin Tarantino. That's M. Night Shyamalan? Jess is getting the wrong person. Jeez, old Pete's.
What? She got the wrong one mixed
up?
She
said, you got to see The Hateful Eight. I'm like, that wasn't M. Night
Shyamalan.
That's
a cowboy movie.
Well, it also was an M. Night Shyamalan. That was
But it was
Quentin
a stupid
Tarantino,
M. Night.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Tarantino.
Yeah, it was Quentin Tarantino. So Jess is all confused.
Let me look up Arrival for you.
Okay. All right.
Because I saw it with Bridget. And it was okay. It was slow in spots. But again, Arrival.
By the way, Roger, hold on.
Yeah.
1 second.
All right.
I have to say that we are at the moment so pleasing and so infuriating our listening audience.
Why?
I just got the two greatest dichotomy of texts ever. I'll start with this. 847 writes, I like Matt P. Roger. I like Matt and Roger are something. I like Matt and Roger are good together. Thank you, Susan. Another text writes, this is like a stoner conversation between boring people.
Yeah, then why are they listening?
Maybe they're not anymore. Probably they're hate listening.
hate listening.
I love it. Yeah. It's okay. Like two really boring people are stoned and talking about life. God, stop it already. All right. Roger will tell us what Arrival is like after we take this quick break because we're behind.
We now have a winter weather advisory for a Sunday morning for Ford, Grundy, Iroquois, Kankakee, Kendall, LaSalle, Livingston, and Will counties in Illinois.
So that's not even. So you didn't mention King or Cook, right?
No. We didn't. Not yet.
Wow.
There's always like a dot in weather.
Yeah.
Benton, Jasper, Lake Newton, and Porter in Indiana. Because, again, it's on the side of the lake, snow belt, Lake Michigan snow belt.
Yeah, okay.
Temperatures around the area right now, 31 at O'Hare and Itasca, 32 along the lakefront, 33 at Midway. Lake Michigan water temperature, a balmy 36 degrees. Winds out of the north at 9. I'm Roger Batterson in the WGN Newsroom, ready to join the conversation whenever a story changes on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Matt Bubala show on 720 WGN, 4:08 in the morning. In another hour, we'll hand the reins over to Max and Orion for the morning show. Thanks for being up late with us or getting up early. Maybe a lot of you probably just waking up right now because they're thinking, okay, it's the last day before Christmas Eve. I got stuff I got to get done. I understand your feeling if that is you. So good luck to you out there. Texter Kathy said, Matt, Merry Christmas. Why doesn't your mom leave today and miss the messy weather? Be safe out there. Well, that would be logical, Kathy, but mom brings Aunt Mary with her, and Aunt Mary doesn't like staying overnight. Aunt Mary doesn't want to stay in a hotel, things like that. Okay. So it's
are they
Christmas
like
Eve it is.
Coming over Christmas Eve and then leaving Christmas Eve?
So their plan is get up Christmas Eve morning, go to church, go out to breakfast.
Got it.
And then start the drive to our house, get to our house around noon. We have dinner at 3:30. And then they're back on the road at 4:30.
Wow.
Yeah.
They really got it planned out.
They got it scheduled out. And here's the issue. I screwed up, Roger.
Uh-oh.
I didn't take care of things like I should have.
Oh, jeez. Man, what am I going to do with you?
I don't know. So for my Christmas dinner to work, I need the Polish sausage that we buy from Northwest Indiana. It's called Maruszak's.
Okay.
Now, last time I was out there, I didn't get it. I should have planned ahead, but mom got it. And then we talked about this week whether I would drive out and grab it. And she said, well, we're going to get there like at noon. And if we're not eating till 3:30, you can just put it right in the pot with everything else you made. It'll be fine. I said, okay, that's good. We'll do that. Okay. So now I'm really counting on mom to come because I need the sausage.
Oops. Can't you do anything right?
Oh, Matthew. Yeah. Well, so we're going to just hope for the best. I'm going to hope that the snow comes after they get there, and then they can either stay if they want or they can tough it out to go home.
They could leave a little earlier if they get the breakfast to go. They can eat on the car.
They can just skip breakfast.
Well, I guess.
Get a donut.
There you go.
Munster has one of the best donut places. It's called Munster Donut. It's on Calumet Avenue right off of Ridge Road. And they are good donuts. Munster Donut. When I was a kid, it was Mr. Donut, which I think was a chain. And then I don't know what
it
happened.
Was a chain.
They broke off and they became Munster Donut. Yeah. And they are good donuts.
Well, maybe they'll pick that up.
They should.
And bring you some.
Maybe they will.
Ooh.
For my birthday. That's a good idea.
Yeah, when's your birthday again?
Christmas Day.
So is my brother's.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was born on Christmas Day.
Isn't that something?
Nice Jewish boy.
Born on Christmas Day.
Hey. I'm not kidding.
That's funny.
Rick would be 65. He would be 71.
Wow. My mom in early January will turn 75.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I understand the hesitancy to do the driving in the dark and the weather and stuff like that. I'm sure I'll be like that too. Yeah. Hopefully I'll be like that by then.
Hopefully.
Hopefully I won't still be driving like a maniac is what I'm saying.
Well, you still got a lot of driving to do with the kids for the baseball and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we do. And the kids are finally out of school, so that was good. That week is over, and I look forward to the next couple of weeks and, relaxing a little bit.
By the way, thank you for the pizza.
You're very welcome. It's so good, isn't it?
It was very good. And thank you for the gift.
Oh, absolutely.
I really appreciate it. I'm sorry I didn't get you anything.
You don't need to get me anything at all. You just be here every Friday night when I arrive, sir.
You got a deal.
That's all I ask.
You got a deal.
That's all I ask. So, all right. So, Northwestern got trounced by Oklahoma. But they were, Oklahoma was ranked 17th.
Yeah, right.
And Northwestern has fallen out of the rankings now, right? Yeah. Hopefully they'll, you know, I hope it's not a one and done situation with making the tournament. You really want to keep that going.
Yeah.
Now, did you see, so there is a walk-on player on Northwestern. His name is Charlie Hall.
Okay.
He is the,
yes.
He's the son of Julia Louis-Dreyfus, famous for so many things, maybe most famous for her role as Elaine on Seinfeld. But of course, she had the New Adventures of Old Christine. She had another show, and now Veep for the last number of years on HBO that she's won some Emmys for and things like that. She's just been incredibly successful.
Well, her husband
is
Brad Hall. Yeah,
he was a writer on Saturday Night Live. He was on Saturday Night Live, and I'm pretty sure he's still a writer. I think he writes and stuff like that. But Julie's the one bringing home the bacon. Let's face it. But their son, Charlie, is walk-on at Northwestern.
Yeah.
And this week, he got his first ever point. He doesn't get into the games that often.
Right.
And he missed a three-pointer, but got fouled on it, and then took three free throw shots. Only made one of them, but he did make one.
Yeah.
So he got his first career point.
He did get into the playoff game.
The NCAA tournament game last year, did he?
Because she was at the game, and they showed her in the stands going wild when he got into the game.
That's cool. So Charlie, there was a great picture that Julia retweeted this week. You know, there's a famous picture of, who was it? Who scored the 100 points in a game?
An NBA player?
Yes. Who was the most famous player of all time?
Not Oscar Robertson.
Is it Wilt Chamberlain?
Well, there's many greatest players of all time, but it wasn't Wilt.
Scored 100 points in a game. Only one guy's ever done it. It was Wilt Chamberlain.
No. I don't. No. Hold on a second.
It was Wilt Chamberlain. Bet you a dollar. And now, Mr. Google, Roger Badish, will look up who scored 100 points. I'm sorry, what?
You're right.
I'm sorry, what?
Matthew Bubala is correct. Ladies and gentlemen, in 38 states and Canada.
After Wilt Chamberlain scored 100 points a game, there's a famous photo of him just holding up a piece of paper that says 100 on it.
Correct.
So they took a picture of Charlie Hall after the game in the locker room with a piece of paper he's holding up that has number one on it. It was pretty cute.
That's funny.
So hopefully there will be some more exciting things to happen.
Yeah, what year is he in school? He's got to be at least a sophomore if he was in a game last year.
I think he's a junior.
Junior?
Okay. I think so. He could be a senior. I don't know. But Northwestern football plays this coming week.
Yeah, we got a bowl game coming up.
Friday in Nashville.
Yep.
I'd really love to go to that, but we're not going to. But it would be cool to go to Nashville and see them play. Hopefully they will win and finish the season strong as well.
That would be nice.
That would be nice.
Yeah. They did power through the end of their season.
They tore it up through the end of their season. They had a great end of the season.
Yeah.
Firing on all cylinders.
I just hope this time off. I always worry about having time off. You know, you start to get into a groove.
Yeah.
You know? And
well,
both
teams go through it, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. The other team's off too, so, you know.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And did you and Bridget get a chance to go see Star Wars yet? Or you?
No, you know, we were talking about this the other day. We haven't seen, I want to go see the Thor, I want to see the Black Panther, I want to see Justice League, even though my daughter told us the other night, don't bother.
That's what my son Jack said, too.
Really? Yeah. God. And I want to see the Star Wars, and there's a couple of other ones. And we just don't have the time. Did we talk about this last week about trying to coordinate how she feels and my work schedule and the kids and all that? And we might go. Well, no, we can't go because now I'm working 12 days straight.
So I wanted to go see. I want to go see this Darkest Hour movie.
That's Churchill. One. Yeah,
I'm kind of interested in the downsizing movie. Although Matt Damon's not building up a lot of goodwill here these days. He's got to quit doing interviews.
Yeah.
Father figures, I don't know. That looks a little goofy.
I saw the previews for Downsizing.
Mm-hmm.
Eh.
I don't know. The concept.
I'm talking about the concept.
I like the concept.
Really?
The concept I'm interested in. All right. Coco, that Pixar movie, has gotten incredible reviews.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Wonder, Colleen really wanted to see that with the kids.
I'd like to see that, too.
Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, that looked really fascinating. The Shape of Water one, Colleen wants to see, I think, but...
It's a Creature of the Black Lagoon, modernized.
Anything Michael Shannon is in, I'm interested in, but...
Now, let me just say this. With malice towards none and without any... suggestions whatsoever. I'm just stating a fact.
Okay.
I am a member of SAG-AFTRA, and there are several movies where the actors are nominated.
Sure.
And I need to vote on those actors.
Right.
And they're, in order to vote on them, I must see their performances.
Correct.
And I will be seeing those performances.
Right. You get screeners.
Through some manner, I will be seeing those performances.
Okay.
So I'll talk to you after I see those performances.
Okay. Well, let me know how they turn out.
Well, okay.
The Lady Bird movie.
Yes.
I really want to see
it. Yeah.
I know nothing about it. I'm going to learn nothing about it. I refuse to read about it because at first when
really?
I said Lady Bird, I thought, oh, that's interesting. I wouldn't have thought there'd be a movie about Lady Bird Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
But there is. And it's not, right? It has nothing to do with
it
that movie. Have you seen it?
I have seen previews. Okay. I've seen the trailers.
I haven't seen previews. I haven't seen the trailers. I know nothing.
Well, then
but I do know that Rotten Tomatoes,
100%.
I think, is the highest scoring all time.
Yep.
So I want to see that.
Yeah.
The Greatest Showman I really wanted to see, but now I've read bad reviews on that.
Yeah, because there was a Broadway musical called Barnum.
Okay.
A long time ago, which was a musical version of... P.T. Barnum.
Right.
And that's what this is. But it's not Barnum. It's someone else's take on a musical version of how P.T. Barnum got started.
But it looks like, I don't know, I saw an extended trailer before Star Wars, and I thought it looked really good. It's kind of a fascinating story. Now, maybe the music's not good, maybe the choreography's, I don't know what's not good about it. Maybe the script's terrible. But the trailer... to me, makes it look like it's really good.
No, but and that's so what trailers are supposed to do.
Is there a trailers channel on television? There really
ought
to be.
I actually go online. No, I go online, and you can see these trailers as soon as they come out. There's
I know.
There's a number of sites that provide trailers.
Pitch Perfect 3 is coming out.
Yes.
Pitch Perfect. The original
was
an incredible movie.
It was a hoot and a half.
Pitch Perfect 2 sucked.
Yeah.
And so I'm very sad that there is even a Pitch Perfect 3.
And I've already done the Facebook facial thing for it.
There's a facial thing for Perfect 3?
Yeah. I don't know. It's not available like on a laptop or a... a regular computer, but if you got it on your phone, and if you swipe your Facebook page to the right, suddenly you get these things that you can do with your face. Your face can change into Coco. Your face can change into a monster. You can put rabbit ears on. You could put cat nose on, and... there is one now for Pitch Perfect 3 where it gives you, puts fake lips on your lips and they move with whatever the saying is from, like a catchphrase, from the movie.
Okay.
I have too much time on my hands.
You do. Somehow you do, yes. Because that's just, and let me say this, Anna Kendrick is on my list.
All right.
If we all have a list with our spouses of people that we could run away with and you have to forgive them, Anna Kendrick is on my list.
Okay.
I think that she is so witty and hilarious and funny and just everything. I just want to go hang out with Anna Kendrick.
Oh, okay.
But not at Pitch Perfect 3.
Mm. Well, isn't this, I think they go to Europe on this. That's the premise.
Sure they
now go to Europe.
I'm sure they do.
For a competition.
And hilarity ensues. The first one was so good. Mm. It was so good.
Yeah. Well, it was so unexpected.
It was.
You know.
It was very
good. Very good.
Very good.
So what else are you going to see over the...
Oh, and then I, Tonya. The Tonya Harding show.
Yes, I've heard good things about
that. Oh, do I want to see that? Mm-hmm. And that's getting incredible reviews.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you can't not
Which
like
I will
Margot
also
Robbie.
Be seeing.
So there's a Black Panther movie coming out. I didn't even know that.
You haven't seen the previews for that?
No, I haven't seen a preview for that.
Oh, great preview.
Now, which universe is that in?
The Marvel.
Marvel. Okay, yeah. So that's the Iron Man and all those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And is the Black Panther in these other movies?
Oh, yeah. In fact, Black Panther was just in Civil War. That was the Captain America Iron Man one.
Okay.
Spider-Man was in it. They got special approval from the movie company that owns the rights to Spider-Man. He was in it. Ant-Man becomes Giant-Man, which also occurred in the comics in that battle. You have the Vision now, who's in the Marvel Universe. So, yeah, Black Panther was in this one. In fact, the movie opens up on Black Panther.
Okay.
So, yeah, very cool. Very, 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 very cool.
Okay. Hey, by the way, did you see that, was it SpaceX launched a rocket? Last night, and it freaked everybody out.
We carried a story, and people talking as the thing was flying over overhead.
The photos are really cool.
Yeah,
people are pulling over on the highway.
Speaking
and taking photos,
about out of this
out.
World.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And with all those stories this past week about those videos and things like that, I'm sure there were people like, "Oh my God, what's happening?"
Yeah,
they've arrived. All right, 312-981-7200. Is there any movies anybody wants to recommend that they want to go see, that they've seen, that they're going to get out and take part in over the holidays? You can jump in as well. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala with you on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. A couple of people have texted me asking about where we get the sausage in Northwest Indiana. I believe Mom just picks it up at the Waltz Grocery Store. There's
Waltz
Groceries out in Northwest Indiana. It's Marushak's sausage, and I believe that is M-A-R-U-C-Z-A-K, apostrophe S, maybe? Marushak's. It's good. We used to make Polish sausage sandwiches with Marushak's to take to the Indy 500 when we would go every year. We'd just boil up. it was crazy. We'd boil up the sausages, slice them in half, rye bread, and either mustard or ketchup.
Nice. And then wrap it in tinfoil or?
Pack them up in bags or tinfoil, throw them in the cooler, haul them down to Indianapolis.
Good eating.
We'd be sitting there all afternoon eating Polish sausage sandwiches, which made for a rough ride home.
Burp.
Yeah, I mean, it was. You have about six
and
of those
beers.
And a few beers. That's something else. That's something else. Yes, there's no doubt about that. 312-981-7200. Somebody texted they're going to see Up. Did you ever watch Up?
That yeah, I love movie. Up. Great again, a tearjerker for me.
Oh, yeah. You ball in the first 5 minutes of Up. There's no doubt. That's not hard to do.
Yeah.
I was telling my young sons, Michael and Tommy, this week. My mom would be so proud of this. I'll have to tell her about this weekend or have them ask her about it. Mm-hmm. About an episode of The Carol Burnett Show. I forget why we were talking about flying or something about planes.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them, and maybe I've told you this recently, I just saw, maybe it was Carol Burnett had a 50th anniversary special.
Right, they just did, like a couple of weeks ago.
And they showed the clip from, did you ever see, and I apologize if we just talked about this on the radio not that long ago, but the there was a skit where Tim Conway and Harvey Korman are on an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
Did we just talk about this, like 2 weeks ago?
I don't remember
and
us talking about
Tim Conway
it.
Bought a ticket in economy and Harvey Korman as first class.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I told my boys this story at dinner and Michael was like crying, laughing, thinking about it. And it was just so delightful to think that this 12-year-old boy in the year 2017 could be tickled to death hearing about a skit on the Carol Burnett Show.
Well, because they've never been exposed to that before.
I know,
even
but
nowadays,
that's what's
there's
great
nothing
is
close
like,
to that.
It's such a good, you know, I'm trying to explain. I'm like, hey, it was sort of Saturday Night Live. They did skits. Mm-hmm. It's really, you wouldn't say Carol Burnett's like Saturday Night Live, but it's
the same
format in some ways.
It's situational comedy.
Yeah. Oh, God.
But as skits,
I also saw an episode last week. I was up in the middle of the night or something. I'm flipping channels, and I love finding like the MeTVs or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's all these sub channels that show classic television.
Right.
So there's an episode of the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and in this one, she meets Murray's father. Murray was played by Gavin McLeod from The Love Boat.
Right.
Murray was the writer of the news. Mm-hmm. And this, Mary's alone in the bullpen where they work. Mm-hmm. And this guy walks in. He's like, oh, I'm looking for Murray Slaughter. Oh, he's not in right now. Be in a little bit. Can I? And so these two hit it off.
Mm-hmm.
Her and this older gentleman. And he asks her out and she says yes. And then she's like, oh, Murray, somebody stopped by to see you. So-and-so. Dad's here. And then she's all freaked out. She starts dating Murray's dad.
Yeah.
And it's a really good episode. And I think it was in the 70s, and they're dealing with her dating an older man. It was just such an interesting storyline for a comedy to do back in the 70s.
I'm looking here.
847 says, Decades TV channel on Christmas Day will have a Carol Burnett Show marathon.
Ooh. Ah!
Now I have to see if I get the Decades channel.
I'll tell you this. It's Get TV. Okay. Which I also think is CBS, owned by CBS, I think.
Okay.
They have the rights to all of the TV variety shows, like Sonny and Cher, Andy Williams, all of those. They're playing the Christmas shows, the Christmas episodes from all of these shows.
Oh, that would be interesting.
Yeah. And just great going down memory lane, you know, 95% of the people you see in it aren't around anymore. But
yeah, I wonder if those variety shows hold up. Like these scripted, some of the good scripted ones do.
Some do, but then there's a lot that are topical of that time. Like I think I mentioned to you a long time ago, I was thrilled that Laugh-In was coming back. Reruns of Laugh-In were coming back. And most of it was like topical. It's like it's not funny anymore. I remember falling off the couch when that stuff first came on, laughing my behind off. But now it's like, oh, wow, that wasn't funny. it was funny then, but it's not, you know.
Roger, that's how I feel when I watch one of my favorite memories of childhood TV watching was a show called The Banana Splits.
Yes.
It was on, I don't know, Channel 11 or Channel 44.
La, 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 la,
la, la, la, la, la, la, la, la.
Right.
One banana, two banana, three banana, four. Ba, 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 ba. And there are these goofy character costumes, and in that, while the song's playing, they're riding roller coasters.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember like 10 years ago, Colleen and I are flipping TV this late at night, and The Banana Splits comes out. We're like, oh my God, The Banana Splits! It's the funniest show ever! Oh my God, we're going to watch The Banana Splits! Yeah. And it was so stupid. Didn't make sense. Wasn't funny.
Mm-hmm.
People who wrote it must have been stoned out of their gourds at the time, and I don't know how his kids even enjoyed it for 1 second. And we're watching, oh my God, this is awful.
Wow.
This isn't funny. This is stupid. Couldn't enjoy it for a second.
Season 7, episode 19, Mary and the Sexagenarian. Mary happily ate from a charming older man without realizing that he's Murray's father. But everyone else has difficulty coming to terms with the difference in their ages. Lou Ayres, who played Dr. Kildare on radio.
Yeah.
Played Murray's father.
Yeah. I looked him up on IMDb that night because we were trying to figure out if we knew him from something.
Yeah. But
didn't. All right. It's 4:34, Roger, so guess what?
What?
We're late for the news. What do you know? All right, 4:30 in the morning. Let's check the news headlines. Here's Mr. Baddish. Morning, everybody. Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN. Producer Bob Ferguson is in my way, plugging in cords and boards and things like that. It really looks like you're going to create a fire hazard in here, Bob.
I am.
Okay. On the Mike Stevens Show, Outside the Loop Radio, coming up after Orion at 6 a.m., what's coming in? Bluegrass?
Bluegrass.
A Bluegrass Christmas with Mike Stevens. So that'll be exciting. So you got a full morning here on 720 WGN, everybody. So stick around with us. And you'll be getting your wrapping done. You'll be, Raj, you're making eggnog. Do you guys do eggnog?
We used to, but since I am dairy free, even though I did last year find lactose-free eggnog, and it was pretty good.
Really?
Yeah. Oh,
okay. Well, there you go.
Oh, I love the old eggnog with a little nutmeg eggnog on top.
I never got into eggnog. Yeah. It kind of just freaked me out.
I liked it. I used, before I realized I shouldn't be drinking milk, I used to drink milk like there was no tomorrow.
Yeah.
But then, and since, you know, my family did not celebrate Christmas,
right,
my chances of having eggnog were whenever we'd go over to a non-Jewish family over the holidays, and they would have eggnog, and I loved it.
Hmm. By the way, happy Hanukkah. That just ended, right? Did we have our eight crazy nights
a couple of days ago. Yeah, we did. It just ended a couple of nights ago.
That seems like a lot of pressure. As a Catholic who struggles to get to Christmas, mm-hmm, I don't think I'd be a good I'd be good at Judaism because eight different nights of stuff for the kids.
Yeah, but if you're buying for the little kids, if it's adults, like family member adults buying for the little kids, you buy stuff you know you're going to buy for them anyway. Shirts, socks, stuff they need.
Is that like,
it's not stuff they want?
Do we build
but it's
up
stuff they need?
Like by the eighth night, are they getting something cool?
No,
like I can
no,
see
no,
that's how
no,
I do it. I would
no,
start with
no, no.
Night
no.
one is underwear.
No.
Night two is socks.
No.
Night three is sweatshirt. Night four is
hoodie.
Yeah, maybe something fun now. Clothing like pajamas.
Okay.
And then by 6, 7, 8, we're now the cool things are coming.
Now you give them a pair of Jordans.
Well, maybe video games. Does it have to be clothing? Can I? Is
no,
there never
it can
a video
be,
game involved?
But you have to make sure that it's something that you've approved for them.
Well, the gifts I buy, I approve for them, don't I?
Well, but if you're going to buy them video games and you won't let them have a video game player, then you're not.
Well, that would be the ultimate slap in the face for the kid, wouldn't it? Hey, guess what I got you? A game for the PlayStation that you don't have.
They could go over to their friend's house who's got the video game player. And, you
take
know.
That over to Joey's house.
Yeah,
get
right.
Out here.
But yeah, it's. But as our kids were growing up, it's we got them the big toys on Christmas. Because I had a whole scenario that I did to try to make it special for him.
Mm-hmm.
And for Hanukkah, it was, we call it Hanukkah Geld, which is the
chocolate coins.
Chocolate coins, dreidels, puzzles, books, stuff that they could play with, they could use. Of course, this was back long before we had the video games.
See, that's tough, Raj. So you're in a house where you're Jewish, and then Bridget is
Catholic.
Catholic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're giving the stuff they need for the eight nights of Hanukkah, and then mm-hmm. they're getting the cool stuff on Christmas?
Well, when they were little,
Well, that's no way to sell them on the Judaism aspect of their lives.
But see, they're technically, legally,
mm-hmm.
unless they convert, they're not Jewish.
But, okay, so that's fine. But here's the thing. If I was Jewish mm-hmm. and my wife was Catholic, the competitive mm-hmm. spirit in me
would
have me
saying.
Giving really kick-ass things for eight straight days. And then, what is that Catholicism getting you? One night? I got eight nights of awesomeness and a bar mitzvah. Come on! Yeah. Who's coming with me? I'd sell them on that thing.
Yeah. No, it was no big deal.
No. Well,
it was no big deal. It was just being together, the family being together and having fun and doing stuff, and that's what it is now. It's just making sure that we're together and we're all healthy and that we're all enjoying ourselves and we're getting things that we need as opposed to the things that we want because, things that we want come and go.
That is true. Colleen has instituted a new rule this year that she didn't make up. It's going around social media or maybe Oprah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it was in Good Housekeeping. But we're trying to be better because here's what happens in our house. And Dan, we will get to your call in just a second. Please stay there, sir. We tend to, although we start out with great intentions,
mm-hmm.
We tend to last couple of days really be getting a lot of stuff. And what happens is when it comes to the day before Christmas, and you still haven't figured things out and you're buying stuff, you just start buying stuff.
I got you.
And you spend way more than you should.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So Colleen has tried to keep us set to a budget and try to get us a little more smart about this so we don't end up with a credit card bill next month where we're like, whoa!
Yeah.
And so she's trying to go by the rule of something they want, something they need, something to wear, something to read.
Oh, I like that.
Something they want, something they need, something mm-hmm. to wear, something to read. So I think we have accomplished that pretty much with all of them.
That's pretty cool. Where'd she hear that?
I don't know.
Somebody, that's awesome.
Somebody out there smart. Somebody's spreading that around. I forget where she read that or heard that. But it's a pretty cool mantra to go by, I think. Yeah. So we bought some books, bought some clothes, and a couple of cool things, and yada, yada, and yada.
Nice.
So there we go. All right. Dan has called in on 720 WGN at 312-981-7200. Good morning, Dan.
How are you, Matt? Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, sir. What's going on? Are you down in Indy?
Well, I'm down by your favorite little childhood town of Catlin.
Oh, yes. And stop by the New Joy.
It is snowing quite heavily.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, I've been in snow ever since I come out of Terre Haute, but it's been coming down. The grass is all white.
Wow.
I heard you stressing about snow a little while ago. I thought I'd let Roger know he's correct on his weather forecast, that there is definitely snow falling.
Yeah, well, and that's earlier then, because that warning, I thought, Roger, isn't until for Sunday morning.
Yeah, it's a Sunday morning, but I'm looking at our WGN TV weather radar, and we have a mixture of snow and rain and ice that is just touching Rensselaer, covering Plymouth, Napanee, heading straight up over Goshen up into Michigan, and it is stretching, if I can zoom out here, all the way from Detroit down through Springfield, Missouri. And then south of that is rain. Indianapolis, you said? Indianapolis is right on the line.
Yeah, I came up from just north of Terre Haute. I've been down in southern Indiana.
Okay.
And that was all rain.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You get north of Terre Haute, and it's been snowing hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Noblesville, Lebanon, Crawfordsville, that's all right on the dividing line of the rain and the sleet and snow. So, and then further north, Fort Wayne, right in the middle of it. And this goes into Ohio, the northwest corner of Ohio. But again, like you said, south of that is all rain that's going all the way up into Pittsburgh, up into Pennsylvania, and even Connecticut's getting some of this. So it's a long band of precipitation. And then there's another one behind that is coming in from Nebraska. There's some more coming in from there. So,
all right.
They had thunderstorms down south. You got two.
Yeah.
I had to laugh because I was coming through here, and I thought I the last time I talked to you, I tried sending you a picture of your Kentland because you wanted to see what Kentland looked like. You said you hadn't been here for a while.
Yeah.
It looks the same, I'm sure.
Well, it's a lot different than when I was a kid, because when we used to travel through there in the, my sister graduated in 84. So 85, 86, 87, when we would take 41 from Munster down to Kentland, you went through Kentland and there was the New Joy and a stoplight, I think. And that was it. And now a couple years ago, last time I passed through, there's like three restaurants. So it's craziness down there now.
What fascinates me about down here is this windmill farm, because as far as you can look, either direction, that's what you see.
That's fun at night. I love passing by massive windmills at night because they have the red lights flashing off in the distance. It's pretty cool. Oh, and I think we lost Dan. There goes Dan's signal. Dan, Merry Christmas to you. Thank you for calling in. 312-981-7200. Jean wants to say something. We'll get to her after this break right here on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. Merry Christmas weekend to you, everybody. I guess it's kind of the Christmas weekend, although Christmas isn't until Monday. I'm still declaring it the Christmas weekend. This is the first Christmas, Roger. You know that they have now officially moved Christmas to Mondays. This will be the first Christmas Monday. But from now on, every year, Christmas will be on a Monday. It's a new federal thing.
No.
It's not?
No.
Just kidding.
No. Gonna hurt you.
People would be up in arms about that.
I know, really.
Jean called 312-981-7200. Good morning, Jean. How are you?
Hi, Matt. I'm feeling really old and ditzy because the thing about the something they want, something they need.
Something to wear, something to read.
Something to wear.
Something they want, something they need, something to wear, something to read.
Oh, that's excellent. That's just an excellent way to live to do gift buying.
Except you got to get four gifts.
Yeah. Well,
so if you're only getting one, you got to find quite the combo.
Right. Well, you have to find child, you're in for four gifts, I'm sure.
Well, that's true. But now it's four for each of them. Yeah.
Yeah. And you do have a few there. That's for sure.
We do. Do you have all your shopping done, Jean?
Yes, I shop all year long. That really takes the pressure off, although there's always last-minute stuff. You know, it never fails, where you get ideas, or you looking, waiting for a book to come out that you've been seeing interviews about, and, you know, things like that. So the one that most fascinated me this fall was the one called, On the Other Hand, the whole book about left-handedness.
Oh, really?
And I think I heard it reviewed. I think it was on WGN in someplace else. And now that Charlie Rose is off the air, I've completely lost memory if he interviewed the person. I'm not sure. But anyway, it's quite a scientific approach. It's the interviews were a lot more entertaining than the book appears to be, but I'm giving it to my left-handed son, who is very bright and, you know, patient, so he'll wade through it. But there are definite characteristics that left-handers have that the rest of us don't.
Yeah, that's
and,
neat.
You know, it runs in your family. Well, the really weird thing is my daughter-in-law is very good at assessing what the 7-year-old would like and what the 2-year-old could use and like. And she sends me the links, and then all I have to do is click on the links and, you know, choose from what she's suggested.
Yeah.
The 7-year-old asked for a book on left-handedness with having no idea that I was getting something more sophisticated for his father.
How funny.
They're both left-handed. So anyway, well, the only thing I have thought about this for years and wondered, do you think your last name is Czechoslovakian?
It is. It is. My family is Czechoslovakian. I believe we're Slovak. So.
Okay.
Before they combined, right? It would have been Czech, Republic,
right.
And Slovak. So we're Slovak, yes.
Well, the reason I ask is that my best friend in the world I met her in Indiana. She's originally from the Indianapolis area, and she married a man from East Chicago or someplace up here with the last name of Bubala.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only two Bubalas, you know, families I've ever heard of was yours and hers.
Yeah.
And his. And I know that they were Czech. And I the first time I heard your last name, I almost fell over. And, you know, sometime on family trees, you kind of wonder but I suppose there could have been an awful lot of Bubalas in Czechoslovakia.
Well, there weren't a lot of Bubalas in Northwest Indiana. So that's interesting.
There were?
There were not a ton, no.
Well, there were not. No. I can believe that.
Where is your best friend still married to a Bubala? Or is this years and years ago?
Yeah, unfortunately, he passed away several years ago, and I lost her last December 1st. So, you know, the sons live, one in Tokyo and one in Reno, and they were very accomplished. Talking about his parents now. His father worked like 3 jobs and put the kids through, I think a couple of them through medical school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, really, really were a very hardworking family and very accomplished. And so, and I think that's so often with the more recent immigrants, look around and think, my God, the opportunities, you know, whereas some of our families who've been around forever. And it's not that my family took anything for granted, but I mean, you look around and you see how fast immigrants can accomplish and climb the rungs of the ladder. And it's really impressive at times how hard they are willing to work.
Yeah.
So anyway, well, it's nice to talk to you.
Me too, Jean.
I loved you, the banter between you and John when you were his producer, and you know, I've been listening to you all for years. So
well, we appreciate that. Stick with us, Jean.
I remember the day you announced the triplets. I nearly fell over.
Yeah, you should have seen what we did.
Yeah, right. And didn't John have, doesn't one of his siblings have triplets?
John's brother has triplets who, guess what, Jean? This is the craziest thing.
Yeah?
John's brother's triplets have the exact same birthday as my triplets.
That is really, really out there.
Isn't that crazy? And his triplets college age. In fact, right. One of the triplets was interning with John over the summer and came to visit me at Black Dog, and I got to talk to him about the industry and things like that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's craziest thing.
When I graduated the UW in journalism, there were no jobs available for feature writers because so many women stayed in college and put their husbands through law school or med school or something, you know. So I took a feature writing job up at Green Bay, and it was a very strange, it was culture shock from Madison, which is very liberal and free-thinking, you know. And it's the Catholics probably were, I guess, 80 to 85% of the Green Bay population, and working women were not common unless they were single there. So they would come to my desk. Other reporters would take turns and come to my desk once a year and say, once a month and say, "You still here? I should have been home barefoot and pregnant." And the truth was, I was kind of putting my husband through his last year of school, you know. So, oh, God, I mean, there's just so many things that how the world has changed. But I did not know about those common birthdays.
Yeah, that's crazy. Is.
And it wasn't cesarean. It wasn't like you made an appointment for that day or.
No. I was bringing Jack to visit Colleen. She had been on bed rest and in and out of the hospital the entire summer. It was craziness.
Oh my God. And so we're showing
up to visit, and we get there, and they're like, "Where have you been?" Because you lose at Lutheran General, we used to go to the underground garage, you'd lose cell reception. It would take forever to get up there. And so they're prepping her to go in emergency, blah, blah, blah. And Jack has to be hauled off by a nurse. It was craziness.
Oh, Gene, we're out of time.
I got to turn it over to Orion. You have a very Merry Christmas.
Right.
We'll talk to you in 2018.
Thank you for taking my call. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Gene. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. To all of our listeners, everybody who hangs out with us here every weekend, thank you so much for a great year. Have a very Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Whatever way you celebrate, hug your family and stay close to everybody and have a good time this weekend. We'll be back here next week. Roger Badish, you have a great holiday as well, sir.
Thank you, sir. You too.
I'll see you next week.